It is once again time for Robert's Rules here on 97.9 The Hill, our segment checking in with House Minority Leader and District 54 Representative Robert Reeves from Chatham County. Always fantastic to have him in talking about some of the major legislative stories and things happening around the Chatham County community. Also in studio with Robert today is Randy Voller, former Pittsburgh mayor and host of On the Porch right here on 97.9 The Hill. Gentlemen, welcome into the program. How are y'all?
Doing good. Appreciate you having us.
Thanks for having us in.
Well, it's great to have you both in. It's been a while since we've been able to have that happen, but it feels like a really good week to be doing that coming off of the local election cycle. Robert, the last time you were in was the week leading up to that, and we talked about how you were feeling going into that, seeing all of the local races. Obviously, you and the rest of the state legislature not on the ballot in this odd number year. But I want to start here. We were talking with North Carolina first vice chair of the Democratic Party, Jonah Garson, earlier this week about some of the trends and patterns he and the party saw through this local election cycle. Were there any takeaways that you had either in the Chatham County area or in the rest of North Carolina coming out of this local election cycle?
Well, to me, one of the things that was very clear is that people are tired of a lot of the madness that you're seeing in politics. And I think they made that very clear, that they made it very clear that they have certain values that they hold and they believe as to what we ought to look like as a community. And so you look at the results we had in Ohio, you look at the results that we had in Virginia, and you look at places basically where citizens were able to make a difference. With Virginia having independent redistricting, you had very fair districts, and with those fair districts, you ended up with Democratic majorities. You look at, and that was against a very popular, well-funded governor, Glenn Youngkin, somebody that, you know, was seen as an up-and-comer, and they figured that he'd be able to carry all boats, and he wasn't, because they did not have these gerrymandered districts to give an artificial advantage. And then you look at Ohio, one of the most red states we've got, but where you allowed citizen-initiated initiatives on the ballot, they were overwhelmingly clear about what they believed. What they believed as far as people and having autonomy, being able to get good medical advice. They showed all these things. And, you know, what is clear is that when we're not left in a situation where we've got gerrymandered districts, where we're not left in a situation where people are getting all kinds of clutter and untruths about what folks stand for, and they actually have a chance to see the issues, evaluate the issues, we're going to do well. And that gives us good feeling about what we're looking at in 24.
Yeah, I was going to say the gerrymandered districts, not something that North Carolinians had to worry about in this election cycle, but goodness knows in 2024 with the primaries and the nationwide elections happening in November, it's going to be a massive talking point. And Randy, we talked with you, Robert, last time about the gerrymandered districts. I want to turn it over to you because I'm sure this has been something on your mind as well.
Well, when the politician can pick the voter, it's a whole different result. And I was having some discussions with some citizens recently, and they said, you know, they're noticing that gerrymandering is creating a situation that the type of person that files for legislative or federal office across the country and in North Carolina, and the quality of them, changes when you have extreme gerrymandering, when all the race comes down to the primary, Robert.
Yes. No, that is absolutely true. And I think what's so sad about it is that when you have races being decided in the primary, the voter gets robbed twice. One, you're not getting somebody who's truly representative of the district and of the people in the district, but two, you're forcing on both sides of the issue people to go further to their extremes. And what you're doing is, if you're running in a Republican district, you're from running further to the right, and if you're in a Democratic district, you're running further to the left. And when it's decided in primaries, the one thing that we're asking people not to do is to walk in with the ability to compromise. And we all know that your best government, your best legislation comes whenever people are held accountable to each other. And right now, with the way we do it in North Carolina, that is not true. And then what that does is it then transposes upwards towards Congress, because we're the one that decides the districts for Congress. And so you get in people, you know, like a Matt Gaetz and folks like that, who just want to go up and believe that they've got the only right answers, they've got the only decisions. And if you veer any at all from what they're saying, if you veer anywhere at all towards compromise, you've got to go. You know, who would have thought that we'd be living in a world in 2023 where Kevin McCarthy, who is not some liberal flower, is getting told that he's not good enough to run the party, or he's not good enough to be speaker?
So one of the things that I think is troubling about gerrymandering, and of course, you know, it's been ongoing since the 19th century, since the concept was first created by a Massachusetts governor, is that when you gerrymander and continue to redistrict, Robert, which unfortunately we've seen this in North Carolina while you've been in Raleigh quite a bit, you lose that connective tissue between an elected official, like when I served in local office and you serve on regional boards, like, you know, the councils of government, for instance, because your legislative lines are moving constantly and your federal lines are moving. So in the past, mm-hmm. you would have a congressional member or a state senator or a state legislator that would be in the same place for many years. So when you wanted to accomplish something for Chapel Hill or Carrboro or Pittsboro, Sour City or Cary or Raleigh, you would know who to talk to. It's getting to the point with the moving of these lines that you don't know, even as a local official, who I need to talk to at the legislator's office or the congressional office to get things done.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And to your point, Randy, it's not just once they are elected and being held accountable there, too. When you're talking about it being so gerrymandered into somebody's favor, too, that's affecting the actual quality of the people who say, well, I might want to become a legislator. I'm going to run for the first time either for the state, on the state level. And then I also think, too, we see that maybe affect people at the local level, not just trying to make the jump from local to state, but people being like, well, you know, things are so divisive there. Sure, there might not be gerrymandered districts here in my town, but I see what happens at the state. I just don't want to do that. And then you're eliminating people from participating in local government where that accountability is a little higher.
Well, I mean, when they love to talk about the Constitution and going back to being originalists. Well, when the framers created the Constitution, the idea of representative democracy from a federal level was we were going to have maybe one member per 30,000 people. They didn't conceive that we'd be a country of 340 million people. They didn't conceive that California would have more people than many European countries. And they were thinking of a legislature growing. And so we've artificially capped this since, I believe, 1929 at 435. If we had continued to grow Congress, and some people think that's a horrible idea, but when you look at what would have happened, and you had 1,000 congressional members, you wouldn't be able to gerrymander like you do now, because there would be roughly 28 members for North Carolina. So you would actually end up with you couldn't draw those crazy lines, Robert, where you have, you know, a congressional seat that starts at the coast and ends up here in the triangle.
Exactly. And I think that what's really sad for me when you talk about being originalist, when you talk about being in line with what the framers wanted, things of that sort, is what I know for sure is that when they created the Constitution, they expected those of us who enforced laws, who made laws, to be honest. And we know how to fix all this. This is not even a discussion. You don't even hear people, when it comes to gerrymandering, try to defend the practice. They just say, we can, so we do. We're allowed to, so we do. And when you think about it, 200 years ago, whenever they're first talking about drawing districts, you probably did have people that were running for office that had a specialized training that helped them in the development of maps. And right now, I could have my 12-year-old son develop a map. And that's not a knock against his intelligence, because the computer does all the work. And so to continue to be disingenuous to voters and pretend like this is helpful to voters is probably the worst part for me. If it's going to be something to help voters, do it. If it doesn't help voters, then we need to change what we're doing.
So I have a question for Robert.
Yes.
Would you agree that it's simply about power?
No, it's completely about power. There's no other reason to do it. I mean, all you want to do is you want to do what you feel. I mean, there was a legislator who was quoted probably about 5 years ago now, who just said that, I believe that, and he said his particular party, that this state is better off whenever our party is in control and making decisions for it. And therefore, I think that we need to have as many of us here as possible. And it's completely the opposite. What the truth is we are at our best as a state, as a community, as a country. We are at our best when competing ideas are forced to be confronted with each other and forced to come up with some sort of compromise.
So here's the question. If it is about power, and I think we both agree with that premise, then who is the power serving?
The power is serving the one or two folks who are lucky enough to be the two most powerful people in the entire state, and that's the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem, who are absolutely positively, whether they're Democratic or Republican, never going to be accountable to the 10.5 million people in this state.
So the thing I have a problem with, and I'm sure you do as well or have questions, is when you're in local government, your budget has to be completely transparent. You go through this whole process and it has to balance. Your budget process is a little opaque.
Little opaque is the kindest thing I think I've ever heard said about that.
I'm trying to be nice and fair.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I mean, you know, we're at a point, I mean, you think about it, you got a $27.5 billion budget that is written by about five people. And when I say written, obviously there are lots of staffers that do it. But as far as the actual elected officials who really make a determination about what that budget's going to look like, five or six people make that decision for the entire state. And that's ridiculous. And that is not what was intended. That is not what it should be. And what it has done is the money that you send to the state, that includes people who are elected, the money that we pay in taxes, it is looked at as a kindness to us when that money is returned to be invested in our communities. And that's not what it is. What we're supposed to be doing is to take this money and make it synergistic, and make sure that we give you your best bang for your buck.
We're speaking with District 54 Representative and House Minority Speaker Robert Reeves, who you heard there. We've also got Randy Voller in studio. Couple minutes left. You mentioned the citizen initiated ballot measures in Ohio. There's already been some talk and reporting in North Carolina about why that is not possible. But for listeners who might go, wow, what Ohio did, that's so great. Why can't North Carolina do that too? What would you say to them?
Well, because it would take 72 members in the House, or basically you've got to get, and I never get my numbers right, but 72 members of the House would have to come up with it and say it's okay. And it's never going to happen. They're not going to do something that they feel is going to take power out of their hands. And so when you see constitutional amendments popping up for us, there are always amendments that seem to just be out there to gin up the vote rather than amendments that are coming from the people that are saying these are things that we think really need to be done and really need to be changed out. And I think that what you saw with reproductive rights in Ohio, considering the voting patterns of Ohio, is probably one of the more amazing things we've seen in the country. Yeah. And to not allow our citizens to do it is a shame.
And that's because they have something in their state constitution saying citizens can initiate that.
Exactly.
North Carolina does not. So I wanted to close that loop because I know that's a question that a lot of folks are asking.
Yes.
We have just a few minutes left. Randy, I want to turn it over to you. Going back onto the local side in Chatham County, in about 90 seconds or so, what were some of the takeaways that you've seen from the local side of elections in the last week?
Well, I think we had a historic election night in Siler City, which is an area that's going to see an awful lot of growth with Wolf Speed and Toyota north of it in Randolph County, and obviously what's happening with VinFast that's, you know, southeast of there. You had, I think, the first African-American mayor in a minority-majority town ever elected on election night. You also had Travis Patterson elected, who's also African-American, and he, I think, was elected at large. That's historic because you had the districts that were drawn there, but you've never had an African-American mayor nor an I'd have to go back and look, but you got an African-American at-large member of the council. So that was a big change in Siler City. The reasons this happened could be discussed on another show, but that's a big change. Pittsburgh, you know, there wasn't a challenge for mayor. John Foley won, and you had the two incumbents won. So Jay Farrell gets his fourth term. John Bonnets gets his third. I think things are going to stay pretty much, you know, where they are, talking about affordable housing, Chatham Park, water quality, those things. And then when they certify the election on the eastern side, Chatham County does have a party carry in that District D. And if it holds true where the vote count is today, Sarika Bansal will be the first Indian elected to the Cary City Council, which is quite significant as well.
Lots of fantastic storylines coming from there. And to wrap us up, Robert, I know we're in this kind of chill period a little bit on the state legislature side. How have you been feeling the last couple of weeks, and what are you looking forward to as we get to the end of the calendar year?
We're still trying to get folks ready for the campaign, so we haven't been able to do much of a chill. But I do want to make one quick comment on what we've seen in Cary and Siler City. In Cary, you'll have your first Indian American elected who ran as an unaffiliated.
That's
which
correct.
Which was really amazing. And then when you talk about what happened in Siler City, here's the significance of this that I hope that folks that care about democracy listen to. African Americans in Siler City are actually the number two minority in Siler City. So that means that you had a combination of Latino and African Americans, and obviously along with white voters, who came together to create a historic election. that does not happen without Latino voters trusting in and believing in the new mayor and Travis and making that happen. So I think that that should be noted for a lot of folks when they're thinking about how do we overcome some of these problems with gerrymandering and things of that sort. That's how you do it. You get three groups together that recognize there's a common good.
Absolutely.
Coalition building.
Yeah. As Randy said, I think we might have to do an entire segment at some point of Robert's Rules in the future talking just about Siler City, because that is a pretty exciting part of our community and the Chatham County community. In the meantime, we'll let you guys get back on with the rest of your Wednesdays. Robert Reeves, representative for District 54 in Chatham County, as always, thank you for popping in. And Randy Voller, thank you so much for joining us this week, too.
Great to be here.
Yep. Thanks a lot.